Bang my gap. All right, I'll call to order our Water Issues Committee meeting with our Board of Directors for the Orange County Water District on Wednesday, January 8th, here at noon in the boardroom. Can we all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? And I'll ask Director Green to lead us in the pledge.
Hands over our heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands. One nation,
under God, indivisible,
and justice for all.
For all.
All right. May I please have the roll call?
Yes. Roll call. Director Nguyen. Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Tran. Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Sheldon.
Present.
Director Meeks. Director Amezcua. Director Green?
Here.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Great, thank you. All right, are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
All right, thank you. And visitor participation, this is the time for those who wish to speak from the public. We'll have up to 3 minutes. Are there any members of the public in person or online? Okay, all right, we'll move on to our consent calendar, items number 1 through 5. Does anyone have any questions or is there a motion?
Move it.
All right. I have a motion. Is there a second, please?
I'll second the motion.
All right. Director Yeo, I'll call for the vote.
Roll call. Director Yeo.
Yes.
Director Wiegand.
Yes.
Director Bilodeau. Director Bilodeau.
Yes.
Director Sheldon.
Yes.
Director Green.
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now is the time for our informational item. This is item number 6, a draft resilience plan, adaptive strategies for securing abundant and reliable water supplies.
All right, so we'll have a tag team, right? Amy and Adam to present our resilience plan and our strategy for the new resilience plan.
All right, great.
Yes, okay, fabulous. Okay, wonderful. The planning department is very pleased to be back in front of WIC to talk about our OCWD resilience planning efforts. This is a new effort to what has historically been done. Traditionally, OCWD had a planning document called the Long-Term Facilities Plan, which was focused on facilities specifically. The last board-approved long-term facilities plan was in 2014. That is over 10 years ago. The reason why it's been so long is because we've had several big issues happening. Our focus has been on the completion of GWRS, on conquering the PFAS problem, and then, of course, we had the pandemic. Last year, the planning department, roughly this time last year, began a new effort to re-envision our long-term planning document. And we came up with a proposal for a resilience plan. We brought that idea internally into the agency, received feedback from staff and management and our general manager. And then we did bring that to the producers for feedback and review in July of last year. And we also mentioned it at WIC last year. We've incorporated all of the feedback from everyone, and we've now started really drafting a final report. And today we want to walk you through that framework and implementation plan. This new concept of a resilience plan is a more holistic approach to planning than we have done in the past. It would enable us to be a little bit more flexible, quicker to implement projects, and has a larger scope of planning effort. It would no longer be just on facilities planning, but it would look at feasibility studies, planning studies, tool development, technology, and just also a broader timeline. We are looking at a 5 to 25 year horizon rather than just a 5 year plan. And we are looking at all of the risks to our agency, not just a few. So we're trying to do a more holistic view and provide many different options or alternatives to solve those risks. And depending on the risk and the timing, you would choose the most appropriate alternative. Now, many projects have been identified in this effort. We are not committing to doing any of the projects. We're just identifying projects. So we are not committed to anything through the study. This is not a CIP program, which many other agencies are familiar in operating through. This is a proposal, a resilience plan of alternatives that we can choose when the timing and the funding is available. Another component of the resilience plan is being adaptable and being ready to implement projects. So we want to make that easier as we move forward. So we've taken this huge list of projects that have been identified, and we've narrowed it down with our general manager and other, the board and our producers, their feedback, and we have determined a priority list of projects. So that gives us our focus. And then within that focus area, we can then go out and look for funding. And a lot of the problems that we're identifying for the future, they're large dollar cost items, sediment removal, bringing in different water supplies. So now we need to look for funding sources. This could be cost sharing opportunities with other entities and agencies. This could also be grant funding. Very much like what we've been doing for PFAS, right? We need to apply that same strategic planning towards these other problems that we need to solve. Additionally, with our priority projects, which would, be a five-year time horizon, we would want to do 10% design of the engineering plans for those projects. And with that 10% design, that allows us to do a little bit more work with our CEQA NEPA and our environmental permitting, all of which take a great deal of time, usually a year or so to do that kind of work. So if we've done that upfront work early, that allows us, when the timing is right and when the funding comes in, to implement those projects a little bit more quickly. So again, we're changing our planning horizon from a 5 to 25 year lookout. That helps us identify the risks that are coming and gives us plenty of time to start planning, looking for funding, and implementing those projects. Some of these projects, it would take a decade to implement and get it through design. So we do need to start looking a little bit earlier in our planning horizon. So we have those risks identified out to 25 years. We're also aligning with the Urban Water Management Plan and the forecasts for consistency, and to develop regional strategies as well. And again, the priority list is the five-year time horizon window, and that's where we're going to put most of our effort for grant funding and for cost sharing. And also the project list is no longer just a facilities-based project list. As I mentioned, it's more holistic in nature. It's going to incorporate feasibility studies, planning studies, opportunity for tool development and technology. And since we've had so much focus on PFAS and the groundwater replenishment program, we're looking forward to having more grant support and likely will be coming forward to ask for that in our budget to help fund and look for funding for these identified projects. Adam is going to come up and walk everyone through the framework for this conceptual program and our implementation strategy.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. So we have organized the resilience plan around four key district assets that you see here on the slide: the groundwater basin, the Santa Ana River, GWRS, and our natural resources, primarily behind Prado Dam. And so we're going to identify some key challenges we see with each of these assets. This isn't a comprehensive list, but just some of the highlights of what we want to be mindful of and addressing in the resilience plan. So for the groundwater basin, we're concerned about seawater intrusion, obviously water quality, PFAS and VOC cleanup projects. We need to optimize our recharge facilities. Some of them are getting older and aging, and we need to rehab them and get them modernized. And then we have future water demand. We need to be careful and mindful of where those water demands are going and how we can continue to meet the needs of our producers. For the Santa Ana River, we're looking at potential decline in Santa Ana River base flows in the future as upstream agencies do more water recycling. There's also the issue of weather whiplash. We're seeing greater extremes in wetter wets and drier dries, and how do we manage storm flows, in particular during the really wet years? For the groundwater replenishment system, we're looking at potential decline in wastewater supplies and also periodic gaps in recharge capacity. There are periods of time, especially in the wintertime when we have very wet years, where we have an abundant source of stormwater and we have to de-rest water. We want to be able to manage both of those and recharge both of those and maximize the capture into the groundwater basin. For natural resources, there's sedimentation occurring at Prado Dam that taking place every day, slowly eroding our conservation pool. So we want to be looking at that and seeing if there are projects to preserve our pool in a cost-effective manner. And maintaining habitat health is important as we manage, as we increase the amount of stormwater we're capturing behind the dam, we impact habitat. So we want to make sure we maintain habitat health to continue to maximize our stormwater capture in the future. So to address some of these challenges, we've come up with a lot of different ideas over the past years. And we started with 52 projects in concept about a year ago and winnowed those down to 16 priority projects and studies that are in Appendix A of the resilience plan that you have. And then all the remaining projects are in Appendix B. So we don't want to ignore those. They're still important ideas and concepts, but the 16 priority projects are really the ones we want to focus in and hone in on over the next 5-year period. So I want to just refresh your memory on the resilience plan process, how we got to this point. It starts with ideas, right? So we have this internal working group called the Recharge Enhancement Working Group that's been in place since the early 90s. And we also have a strategic planning group that deals with all other projects that are non-recharge related. So this is really a hub where we're generating a lot of ideas, and we also get ideas from the board, producers, and other people. And then we have data. We look at demand projection in the future. What are the needs of the producers? What are our supplies, you know, especially with respect to the river water and stormwater? What are those supplies going forward going to look like? And we have our regulatory obligations, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act requirements. We have MCL established by EPA for PFAS, for example. So we have to comply with those different requirements as well. So you take these together and you come up with projects, ideas, workshops, and you rank them. And we did this process over the past year to come up with the 25 or 16 projects that are the priority project for the 5-year focus in the resilience plan, which, like Lisa mentioned, are the 25-year planning horizon. Now, within those projects, we want to tee up some of those for grant funding, like Lisa mentioned. For implementation, other projects will stand on their own and be implemented. And implementation is its own process that we go through, typically requiring an engineer's report, project approval by the board, CEQA, NEPA, if required, and design and construction. This is the overall process that we use. So now I'll get into the guts of the report itself, talking about water supply. So this is a graphic showing our recent supplies to the basin in the past few years. And GWRS and natural recharge provide a really good base load of source of supply that are pretty consistent from year to year. But looking forward, base flows and storm flows are kind of projected to decline. And that's really what I want to focus on the next slide and how this impacts us here at the district. So because of the upstream water agency project that they have on the books to recycle more water out of the river as well as capture more stormwater, stormwater and base flows are projected to decline into the future. There was a very comprehensive effort to develop a surface water groundwater model in the upper watershed. And all these projects that the agencies had were put into this model 25-year simulation period to come up with what would the resultant flow be with and without these projects. So the no project scenario represents the bookend of today's condition with everything being as it is. And then the all project scenario assumes that every project identified is built and implemented. Now, it's going to take a long time for these projects to be built, and some of them may never be built. So this is probably a very conservative bookend in terms of where supplies might be heading. But I think for planning purposes, it's a good approach to have this conservative bookend. I also want to mention that the base flow projection don't take into account the habitat values at Prado Dam. We know that there's a certain requirement for water at Prado to maintain the habitat. So that might be a constraint in terms of how low base flow can go. There is a legal minimum with the judgment that we have with on the river, but the habitat might require more water than what that judgment provides. So those are things that we're looking at and collecting a lot of data, make sure we understand what the habitat needs are as flows decline in the future. So stormwater recharge in the short term are going to increase because of the conservation pool going up. We're going to actually, in the next few weeks, have approval to go to 508 behind Prado Dam from the current 505 with a minor deviation. That's going to provide a lot more options to capture more stormwater. And then implementing forecast-informed reservoir operations in the future, we're hoping to go to elevation 512. And that will further increase our water conservation pool. So in the short term, our stormwater capture is going to go up. But what's going to happen is as the stormwater flows decline from upper watershed capture projects, that's going to slowly go down. And sedimentation is also going to erode our conservation pool. So we're losing water two ways, more capture by upstream agencies, sedimentation filling our water conservation pool. And this graphic just gives you an idea of what could happen over the next 50 years. In 50 years, that conservation pool at 512 could be cut in half due to sedimentation. So that's going to have a pretty significant impact on stormwater capture in the future. So putting these together, kind of what is our future outlook in terms of water supplies? Well, we're going to see about a 10% decline over the next 25 years, primarily because of reduced base flows and storm flows coming down from the upper watershed. So that's something we need to plan for, and projects that we have in the resilience plan are going to help minimize that reduction and maybe even increase it in some cases. So now I'm going to switch to the demand side of the equation. In 2020, MODOC did a study to look at future demand in our OCWD area. It showed they're going to increase about 4% over the next 25 years, as shown on this graph. The regional housing needs assessment was only included for one producer. MODOC has started a new study this year that will be done in the fall. So we may need to update the resilience plan based on the outcome of that study. But for now, we're going to go with these demand projections for the current plan. And I just want to highlight the fact that the past couple of years have been very wet years. And so you can see the demands most recently are much lower than the projections. And that's because the last 2 years have been very wet years. So there's a lot of volatility in the demand based on hydrology. So to maintain an 85% BPP going forward with the reduction that we're seeing in base flows, storm flows, as well as the increased demand going forward, the district would have to buy more imported water in the future to maintain an 85% BPP. So these purchases would be, vary based on hydrology, wouldn't be every year that you have to buy this kind of water. And I also want to mention that the time frames you see in the bottom, these are five-year planning blocks. They're not individual years. So even though it says 2025, that's just represent the five-year period. Doesn't mean we need to buy imported water this year. And we don't even need imported water in the near term because the basin levels are so high, and also there's lower groundwater demand due to PFAS reduction. And as we know, imported water costs are always going up and projected to go up 70% over the next decade based on MET's own projection. And this is a key benchmark we use in all of our water supply projects when we evaluate the cost effectiveness of implementing a project. The benchmark is imported water. What is the cost? Are we cheaper than that? And so in the resilience plan, we have a lot of projects that are water supply oriented, and imported water is a key benchmark that we're going to be using to decide whether it's even cost effective to implement. So before we go over the final schedule, I want to share a couple of highlights from the plan itself. One is we are making this plan accessible to people with visual impairments. And then we also have a tool that we're using to better illustrate where the projects are located and help people navigate those. So I'm going to share with you something that our GIS department has built for us. And it's called a storyboard right here. And so this is a tool that allows you to go through the Appendix A projects, all 16 of those projects, and kind of see where they're located and what they do. So starts with introduction, table listing all the projects here. And then you get a map here showing where all the projects are located in Orange County. And we have categorized these projects into four different groups: water supply, recharge facilities, operational improvements, and basin management projects. So that's how they're color coded. And we've also geographically kind of segregated them. So first we have a central groundwater basin area with PFAS and a groundwater basin operating range expansion study in this area. I jump down to the coastal area. So you've got the Sunset Gap Barrier. And each of these projects are numbered, and there's a link to the project description available. So you can click on the link and see the project description. Then we'll jump to the Forbay area. We have a lot of projects up here in the Forbay, obviously. And then finally, the final area is over at Prado, where we have projects in Prado. And you can also navigate with these tabs up here at the top. So this is only internally available, but when we publish the final report on the website in the future, this would be a tool that the user can use to navigate through and look at the different projects that we have. So Lisa will come up and cap us off and take us home.
Great job, Adam. One of the things we're trying to do in planning and natural resources is visually tell our stories of what we're trying to do and make information more accessible and easy to understand. So we want to make sure the board knows what we're doing and that you're digesting that information well as our producers and everyone else, even externally, if we choose to share that. So we really appreciate our partners in GIS helping us tell our story well and visually, and we look forward to doing that in the many things that we're doing. With the resilience plan, as I mentioned, we presented this conceptually before last year. We're looking to finalize it now, and we are putting the final touches on it, looking for last final feedback, and then we plan to bring it to the board in February for final approval. So we appreciate your time. We hope to get some feedback, and thank you very much. Open for questions.
A good thorough presentation, a year's worth of work. So thank you for the hard work and in front of us for today. I'll ask a board if they have any or anyone online if you have any questions or follow up.
No, I'm good.
All right. It seems like you guys
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Sure, go for it.
You know, several years ago, the district prepared a similar type of a document, and the city of Huntington Beach sued us over it for lack of CEQA. We prevailed, but as I recall, the only reason why we prevailed was because we received and filed the document and didn't, you know, formally adopt it. And so I'm curious on this document, what the plans are for what action the board will be asked to take, and also what CEQA, if any, we're going to do.
I see our council online as well.
I thought someone might tag me in on this one. I think that's a great point you brought up,
Chair Bilodeau, and I think we're just going to have a discussion about that, you know, whether we would do a programmatic approval. But I was unaware of that prior go around with Huntington Beach, but I think we'll need to think about that strategically on the best way to approve it without increasing risk of potential litigation. So I think that's something we can add to our list of things to talk about.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is John Kennedy. That is our plan, to just receive and file the report, and then there's no CEQA necessary to protect us from what Director Bilodeau just mentioned has happened in our past.
Great. That answers my question. Thank you.
And Director Yeo?
Yeah, thank you. That's what I was thinking too. Like, why would we need CEQA for just a planning document? You know, if we pick and choose projects that we're going to pursue, then we have to determine the level of CEQA and NEPA needed. But anyway, my question is regarding, in one of the slides you have stacked bar charts. Can we go to that? That is showing that, you know, every 5 years, what the potential gap of water supply that we would need to develop or acquire in order to maintain a balanced supply and demand, right? Yeah, maybe 14 or, yeah, I think it was 14.
Is it 12 or 14?
14.
14.
Yeah, so I'm reading that you're the stack bar chart is suggesting that you know, at every 5 year interval, potentially, you know, with the projected demand increase and the potential of upper watershed agencies developing water conservation projects or recycling projects, that could potentially be the gap of additional supply needed in order to maintain balance, correct?
That is correct. These okay. are five-year increments.
Projections.
Projections. Of course, we can't predict if it's going to be dry or wet years.
Correct.
So mm-hmm. we're just kind of averaging that. And
Understood. Yeah.
We're having
I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, just a reminder, we're having a decrease in storage availability behind Prado over time, as well as a potential decrease in flows. So you have a double decrease of water over time.
Yeah, and are we, it was mentioned that potentially we would need to import water or purchase imported water in order to maintain that balance. And obviously every year there's a different variables. So it's not going to be exact. But in dry years, I guess we may not have imported water available for purchase. So that we'll have to draw down the basin supply, right? And luckily we have that buffer there. Are we looking into developing additional water supplies? I mean, GWRS is maxed out. Are we looking into perhaps, you know, better managing the available resources that we have to potentially minimize the runoff from, you know, loss to the Pacific Ocean, you know? What I'm saying is that we got all those recharge basins, right? Are we looking into further optimize the use of them? Sorry for the long-winded question.
No, I appreciate those questions. I think they're very timely and important. So I think there are different strategies that we can take in regards to all of your questions. So one is optimization of operations, using FIRO, forecast-informed reservoir operations, that will help us better move water so that we can anticipate and maximize capture when we do get it. So that's one way of optimizing our operations. One of the things that we're really looking forward to pursuing this year particularly is municipal stormwater as a new potential water supply source. And that means looking for direct diversions of city stormwater into our facilities directly. We're also looking for indirect opportunities where people can put water into the ground. It gets into our water basin, but it's not necessarily through our facilities. It might be through private or through their own property. And then we are also looking at a stormwater credit banking program, which could potentially generate funding to help cost share these infrastructure projects that we might be interested in pursuing as a new water supply source. So those are some of the things that we're looking to implement. And we have identified this risk in our resilience plan, and we have several opportunity projects that we could pick and choose from if we wanted to pursue any of those to kind of address this risk.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lisa. I have no further questions.
Great. Thank you, Director Yeo. Those were good questions. And Director Bilodeau, the historical perspective to answer those, have those answered is great. So is there any other directors? Yes, Director Sheldon.
Thank you, Chairman. I have quite a few questions. I'd like to first go back to the item raised by Director Bilodeau and suggest that we submit a notice of exemption on this report under CEQA. It's a 35-day statute of limitations period. And in an abundance of caution, that could potentially help us. I don't think it'd be too hard for our staff to look at doing that notice of exemption. And that might add a layer of CEQA protection. I think the form
that was the plan, Director Sheldon. We will do that.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't hear you say that. I'm sorry.
I didn't say it earlier. You're correct.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Yeah. Then moving on the diminished water supply in the coming down the Santa River, we've got upper watershed agencies, you know, doing what they have a right to do, but at the same time, they're getting large grants. And as my friend and colleague Pierce Swan has stated, you know, they're stealing from Peter to give to Paul. And so we're using tax dollars, local and federal and state, to have them recycle, but that's less water in the river. It's really potentially not even a net, it's not a net gain to the region. So have we, you know, looked at what we can do to mitigate that? Maybe they have projects that they're doing that are very expensive they don't have to do? Have we looked at the ones that we've identified that would be coming up? If it's in the best interest of all the parties in the Sapa region to actually have those projects implemented? That was a question.
Director Sheldon, thank you very much. Those are great questions. I did want to point out, and maybe I failed to mention that our last item in our schedule is to receive and file in the CEQA notice of exemption. So that's on our list of things to do. I apologize if I wasn't clear about that earlier.
No problem. It's all good.
John Kennedy has actually commissioned us in our GIS department to develop a tracker of sorts. So we're using GIS technology to understand when these upper watershed projects might come online and then the timing of how that might reduce flows. So Kevin O'Toole, who's in the room, has been working diligently with our GIS staff to develop a proof of concept tool to help us identify which projects are going to come online and in what time frame so that we can better plan for these reduction of flows. Now, a lot of times people put projects, you know, into planning documents, but they don't always get built. So we will be constantly checking in with the upper watershed to see what's coming online and when, and then be able to put that into this planning tool. And we are talking to SAPA about making that a regional tool that everyone could have access to for watershed planning.
That's a great process to have the initial due diligence and analysis of what's going on. And I appreciate that. My question goes beyond that to interacting directly as to the wisdom of doing the projects. So maybe it's an offline conversation. You know, when these come up, you see press releases that, you know, they're going to save X amount of gallons and money and what have you. But what they don't say is they're taking a lot of water from Orange County, which is, you know, I guess I suppose they're right, perhaps. But is that the best fiscal decision? And should the federal government or the state be involved in subsidizing that? My question was more directed at those issues.
And Director Sheldon, I can address that. It's a very big issue. It's a very difficult issue. We've had conversations with the general managers up there saying, hey, you can't say you're creating more water supply if you're taking water supply away from Orange County. It's, you know, it's like a net zero gain. And it is frustrating when you see they're getting, you know, lots of grant money to do projects that may reduce the flows in the Santa Ana River. But as you said, it is their right to do projects if they want to. That's kind of an ongoing issue. We've even brought it up with the Metropolitan Water District that, you know, if you give these agencies a subsidy, you're just kind of changing where the water is being recycled. You're not creating new water for Southern California. So that's an ongoing issue. I also wanted to mention in the past, we've actually thought of maybe we would go to the upper watershed and pay people to continue to discharge water into the river and not reuse it. But there's some big issues with that. And it's very hard to figure out how much you would pay them. And then you also have to figure out, are they doing projects? Are they saying they're going to do a project that they can actually carry out and do? Lisa kind of mentioned this. A lot of agencies in the upper watershed will have lots of projects they want to do, but they don't necessarily have the wherewithal to get them completed. So, just to add, I'm not answering, you know, giving you a direct answer. Those are just big issues that we're aware of and that we're just following. Yeah.
Well, you know, they have the right to do the project. We have the right to talk to our state and federal officials that they shouldn't subsidize the project.
You're right. And we brought it up with SAPA also.
I appreciate that. I have a few more comments. I'll add that I'm in some communications with the House of Representatives Oversight Committee, the subcommittee on government efficiency, and they're looking at a lot of ways to save money. It doesn't seem efficient to me for the federal government to be spending money subsidizing the projects we're discussing because they're not creating new water.
Yeah, I agree. It's just kind of a question of how far do we want to go with this? Yeah.
Far enough to protect our ratepayers. So my next comment is, or question is on all of the studies that all of these, and I appreciate that this is a planning document. It's for those that are familiar with cities and housing. It's like a RENA document. You have to plan for it, but you don't have to build it. So, but what I'm wondering is, are we going to be doing this 10% of expenditure on every single project, including CEQA NEPA? Because I'm concerned they're not all like that close on the horizon, but would be doing everyone, or would you selectively be picking the most viable ones to do that pre-planning?
Yeah, great question. We would be selectively choosing which ones we knew we wanted to move forward with or that we thought had a great grant opportunity, because grants will really only award if you've done enough of the planning effort. So we would identify where our grant opportunities were and then which ones we absolutely knew we were going to move forward with.
Okay. And if I could, thank you. And if I could just make another comment, as you evaluate the costs, you know, I think back in 2014, the Corps of Engineer helped us and they raised the temporarily deviated from their standards to raise the storage by 7 feet. And we garnered by 7 feet of storage additional in behind Prado Dam. And we benefited from that. But one thing I don't know if we've put into our budget is that I believe the environmental impact report for that had a mitigation involved as one of the mitigation measures, and that had a budget of $90 million over time. That what didn't really come, the board wasn't really directly appraised of that when we approved it. So we need to be cognitive of what's the cost, what are the long-term environmental costs to do these, any projects behind Prado. I just want to just put it out there. And that's more just a statement to you. And I am concerned, and I've expressed this before, that if you look at the Delta smelt and it's coming into its threatened status in the mid 90s, and then its endangered status in the early 2000s. Before that, you know, everyone was hunky dory, you know, sending all the water down from the Delta to Southern California and to the farmers. Well, we have a particular fish that may be endangered in our Santa Ana River. And I really do think we need to take more note of that and not be concerned about heading it on, because it's going to hit. It can come back to hit us just like the Delta smelt came back to hit everybody that they had never imagined, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and early 90s. It's decimated our water supply. So I really do think we need to not just hope nothing happens and be quiet and that the problem will go away. I don't think it will. And I'm saying that again for the record, that we need a strong plan to protect the water supply of our Santa Ana River. That, yeah.
Director Sheldon, I completely agree with you on both points. I'd like to just remind everyone that we have been working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife over the last year and a half, and that last year we provided studies showing how we had over mitigated some of our areas and responsibilities, and how we have thus incurred a mitigation bank of credits that we now can use towards future projects. So understanding the environmental cost of a project is critical, and we do have a bank of credits that we'll be able to apply towards those future projects. So it wouldn't be an additional cost at this point until we run out of those credits. So that's good for us to know and keep in our planning portion as we move forward.
Okay, great. You're referring to my comment before, the one I just made regarding the behind Prado and all the mitigation there. And are those credits like on an acreage basis?
Yes. Are they? Yeah, they are.
Okay, great. That's great.
Yeah. You know,
call them tokens or chits.
Yeah, tokens. Yeah.
token currency.
Yeah. And your second comment was
on the trout.
Oh yeah, I wanted to also remind the board and committee members that we have an ongoing obligation to monitor the Santa Ana sucker and where it is in its distribution. So we have an ongoing budget item for that, and we are part of the Santa Ana sucker committee through SOPA. And so we are constantly looking into that, staying aware of that, on top of that, and also working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife regularly in dialogue about any concerns that they have there.
My final question, I'm sure will be the pleasure of my colleagues here today, is on the FIRO. Has that actually been implemented yet? If not, when will it be implemented?
Yeah, that's also a great question. You have so many great questions today. I really appreciate it. So we are on schedule for implementing the 508 minor deviation starting March 1st. So we still are on schedule. When you say implementing FIRO, we are already practicing FIRO by any water that we capture above 505. So Army Corps has been operating above the line. And so that any water captured above the line is because of FIRO. So we are practicing FIRO right now. We're just starting our implementation of FIRO. We have a conversation with Division and LA District on Monday to talk about our implementation plan specifically for FIRO and our program assessment KPIs for that.
So from my point of view, we'll implement FIRO when we have the Gulf Streams flying over the clouds and telling us how far away the storm is, and that the Corps doesn't have to dump water. That's my perspective of when we implement FIRO.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great perspective.
When will that occur?
That's already occurring.
Because it wasn't in the last rain. We were told that that Scripps had to do more studies. I don't believe it was. Thank you. I would like to see the report of how that was implemented, because my understanding it was not.
Yeah, we did a presentation last year to talk about how FIRO was implemented and how much extra water we had recovered during the wet year. I think we had 6,000 acre feet of extra water due to FURO implementation tools.
Due to the ones I mentioned just now?
Due to the latest storms?
No, let me, if John Kennedy is there, John, do you recall the
Yeah.
conversation?
Well, we did, the Corps did implement FURO last winter, and because of that, they were able to hold more water for us. Is that
I
that's what?
thought that our representative art from Scripps, I in my the name escapes me, told us
Marty Groff.
they were still doing more work on it, and they really hadn't been doing the cloud surveys and of.
Well, there's still a lot of work to do to formally and permanently get it, put into the Corps' operating manual. There's probably 5 more years of work before we get to that point, but they are starting to utilize it.
Were they analyzing the timing of rain in the Prado to know when they can, to how long they can keep the level high and when they have to dump it? Was that analysis done that was just described?
Yeah, that's all part of it to
I know
allow
it's
them
part of
to,
it, but was
yeah.
it done? I was told, I thought it wasn't done.
Well, not permanently, not it's not written into their operating manual yet.
Okay.
Um,
Thank you
it's
very
a
much. I won't take any more time. I appreciate all the great work and all the great answers.
Thank you.
Hey, Director Shelby. So you might bring up, but is there any other directors that have any other questions?
I don't see any.
Okay. All right, seeing none and seeing no further in the room, I'll move on to having the direction of the chair to agenda item for our next meeting. I asked earlier. I will ask for any directors' announcements or reports. Seeing none, any general manager announcements or reports?
There are none.
Okay, all right. Well, we're adjourned. Thank you, guys.